we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices radio show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, August the 21st, 2015. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by our guest co-host, Elise Jacobson.
Hi.
Our control room operator, Amir Ali.
Hello.
And our special guest, my sister, Leanna Picard.
Hi, everyone.
Jackie, Alyssa, Tim, and Cynthia are all away today. Welcome, everyone, especially to my special guest host. Did you have enough sleep last night, Leanna?
Oh, no.
How many hours?
Probably not. Less than four.
Yeah, I had four. So, but we made it back here today from the island, and we are ready to put on a great show for you today. Today's show is solely dedicated to the Animal Rights National Conference, which happens every summer in either Los Angeles or Washington, D.C. And you might have noticed that I've been away for quite a few weeks recently. Well, that was partially because I was attending the conference with my sister here, and that happened from July the 30th to August 2nd in Washington, D.C. So, as usual, I have lots to report back on about the conference, which happened to be the biggest one yet this year. And today, Leanna and I will be giving our thoughts and impressions about the conference, plus we'll be playing some short interviews that I did with attendees at the conference, as well as playing several clips from some of the 100 speakers that presented this year. You'll be hearing about speciesism and intersectionality, community building in the animal rights movement, and the power of language and framing, and more. But first, to start, Elise, welcome back as our guest co-host.
Thank you.
We haven't seen you for some time, but I did see you in some pictures online recently at a protest that was held at a Starbucks here in Vancouver. Can you tell us about that, please?
Sure. The protest was put on by Direct Action Everywhere, Vancouver Coast Salish Territories, in solidarity with an organization called Collectively Free for their campaign titled We Are All Animals. And the campaign was kind of centered around the story of Joshua, who was a baby calf who was killed shortly after birth in the dairy industry. And it was basically just calling attention to Starbucks' use of cow's milk and the exploitation of animals that's inherent in their use of dairy.
So I'm curious to know, Starbucks isn't usually a case that gets protested. How did the Starbucks people take it? And this was right in Kitsilano, is that right?
Right, yeah. Well, do you mean like the people working there?
Sure. And then even the patrons there, just sort of maybe a different clientele than going to a steakhouse restaurant.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's like,
exactly.
Starbucks? Why Starbucks? What are you guys doing at Starbucks?
Well, you know, the patrons there actually were surprisingly supportive. There were people filming us while we were inside, and and we actually received applause as we were leaving, which was somewhat unusual. Wow. For these things.
So when you say you received applause, usually there's some kind of a monologue that is said that explains why we're doing this. Can
right.
you maybe touch upon what was said that people supported so much?
It's hard to tell exactly, you know, what points spoke to specific people, but the speak outs that were done were basically highlighting the fact that the breaking of the mother calf bond is inherent to the dairy industry. So basically, in order for a cow to give milk, she must first be impregnated. And she's usually, in the dairy industry, almost always impregnated via artificial insemination. Mm-hmm. And after she has her baby, the baby is taken away from her. And the babies very often are killed. Sometimes the males are sent to veal farms, and the females are sometimes raised to be the next generation of dairy cows, but very often they're just killed instantly. And and there's really obviously no humane way to break that bond between mother and child. They are immediately bonded as soon as the baby is born. And Starbucks, I think the reason why Starbucks was chosen for this protest is because, you know, most people think of Starbucks as a coffee company, obviously, but they use enough cow's milk every year to fill 212 Olympic-sized swimming pools. Oh, I think it was something like 140 million gallons of milk each year, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, and so obviously that is a lot of suffering. That's a lot of families broken up. That's a lot of babies killed. That's a lot of cows terribly exploited. So, yeah, it's just something that I think deserves attention. And
well, I'm really glad that those messages spoke to those people, because everything that you've just said, I've heard it lots of times.
And yeah.
That's why I don't consume cow's milk or milk of any animals. But I bet you, like, a lot of those people were making those connections for the first time.
Right.
So thanks for doing that. And, sure. And how were the, what was the feedback like, or the reaction from the people who worked there? They probably, I don't know if they were expecting you, or it was advertised.
Right. They did seem surprised. Okay. I mean, there was media there as well. There were a couple of media outlets.
Exactly.
It was filming
it,
yeah, exactly. But there were only a couple people working there, and they seemed a little bit taken aback. But we weren't actually in the store for very long. We just did a short demo inside, and then we moved outside. Yeah. And
I saw the news coverage on that, by the way. Actually,
right.
And I think that's great. Whenever we can get news coverage, there's definitely not enough media happening.
Yeah, so, for sure.
So yeah. So thanks for doing that.
Sure.
Thanks.
Thank you.
My name is Farron, and I am right now at 100.5 CFRO Co-op Radio, which has been in my life all of my musical life.
Learning to sense the love. Learning to see the way.
So welcome back to the show. This is our annual report show of the Animal Rights National Conference, which I attend every year. And as I mentioned before, this year it was held in Washington, D.C. from July 30th to August 2nd. This annual event is put on by the fantastic people at the Farm Animal Rights Movement, a nonprofit organization in the United States. And every year they do an amazing job of organizing this magnificent and orangutan event that attracts animal advocates from all over the world and many of the leaders in the animal rights movement. In fact, this year attracted the most attendees ever, which with 1,650 people, and that's up from 1,300 last year and 1,100 the year before. So it seems like the numbers are exponentially growing, which to me is indicative of a rapidly growing animal rights movement. There are also the most speakers this year at over 150 speakers, and they represented more sectors in the animal rights movement than ever before at a conference. And I noticed a great diversity in the variety of topics being covered this year, which seemed to be more so than in previous years. So my dear sister Liana here attended with me this year, and I'm so lucky to have her here with us today because she doesn't even live in this country. So she happens to be here today, and I thought I'd bring you on the show, Liana, to talk about your impressions of the conference, because this was your second time attending and last year was your first year. So what would you say was a highlight of the conference for you, or highlights?
Oh, I just think it's cool to, like, see the people in person who I admire and follow on social media, like Jane Velez Mitchell, who was just hanging out in the exhibit room when we were there. So we got
an interview with her.
Meet her. Yeah. And I took pictures of that. And Jean Bauer, who I met. Like,
from
that's
Farm
just
Sanctuary.
Really cool. Yeah. And just neat meeting him. He was on Jon Stewart. I got to talk to him about being on the show. That was really cool.
Yeah.
And this is a conference where, like, dogs are welcome, so it's always a highlight being in a dog-friendly environment.
Yeah, that's where I get my dog fill for the year, because I never get to be around dogs. And there's Elise. You've got to come just for the dogs.
Yeah, right? I didn't know that.
Yeah, actually, really cool. If you go on Farm's Facebook page, there's several albums of the different aspects of the conference, and one of them is called Participants. And I looked on it yesterday, and they're all of dogs.
Oh,
sure, they're participants, but so are the humans. I thought that was so awesome, because of course you're going to take pictures. There was actually a hashtag for dogs. What was it? Dogs, hashtag dogs of AR.
Yeah.
That, so,
aww.
Yeah, people were using that.
And there was a kissing booth with the dogs. dog.
Oh.
Yes, that Leanna and I both partook in. That dog really liked to kiss.
Oh, yeah. But and then, of course, there's the food. That's the highlight. It's always nice not have to worry about whether the food is plant-based or not. So, and there's lots of free food. There's free snacks in the morning and evenings. And at the end of the conference party, there was just so much food there. Like, I couldn't even try it all.
Yeah, they actually put on, this was the first time they put on, like, this huge feast for, in this huge room for the sort of the end of conference party. There was a banquet dinner on the Saturday, which cost $40, you know, kind of maybe unaffordable for some people. And then an awards ceremony after that. But then the last night, it was just sort of like this free feast of all this like awesome vegan food that they had all donated of like what, everything you could think of.
Yeah. Pizza, chips, Miyoko's cheese.
Yeah. Tofu, curry and rice and lots of ice cream sandwiches and lots of, did you mention the Earth Balance popcorn and lots of
really good
party food. Cool. Yeah. And there was actually a vegan comedian, Jamie Kilstein, performed as well.
Nice.
So that was something new and interesting. Yeah, for sure. So Leanna, this was your second year at the conference. Last year was your first year. What did you take away from it this year that was perhaps different than last year? Like, why come another year, 2 years in a row?
Well, being more like introverted, I guess, I like the familiarity of going back for a second year. So because of that, I felt more comfortable. And this year, I actually met some people who I admire, like Jean Bauer, who I mentioned, and Joanne MacArthur, who has an amazing documentary called The Ghosts in Our Machine. And I also knew from talking to you, who has been to the AR conference multiple times, that the sessions to choose from wouldn't all be the same. Mm-hmm. So I was looking forward to just checking out different topics than I did last year. But I think it's definitely worth attending every year because it's just a great way to stay current about the movement. And you get to hear from these amazing activists and organizations who just give so much of themselves to this movement. And you hear about their success and just about so many issues that are being worked on, not only in the States, but like worldwide. So it's just very inspiring.
And then last year being your first year, you were a first-time attendee then. So what advice would you have for perhaps first-time people who might want to attend this conference but maybe not know how to navigate it? Because it's so huge. There's just so much to do.
Yeah, there is. And probably just like don't feel overwhelmed with this year was a 30-page program that you get at registration. But there's an option for the first session that's specifically for newcomers. And I found that really helpful. They just talk about like getting the most out of your experience there and how to go about doing that. And also, it's just the kind of conference where everyone's together, like the speakers, vendors, and attendees, and you're able to just mingle. You have so many opportunities too. So if you didn't like get a chance to meet a speaker during a session or that they're hosting, then you probably have a good chance that you'll see them just like hanging out maybe in the exhibit room or during the morning or evening snacks or at the plenaries or even in the same session as you. Like they attend them as well and you can get a chance to meet them.
So what was, maybe you can talk about some of the sessions, like what was one or two of your favorite sessions that you attended and why? Like there's just such a diversity here. I've got the program in front of Elise and me, and as you can see, Elise, there's like abuse of animals for science, history of activist repression, measuring impact of our advocacy, being great at doing good, and impact of animal use on the environment. I actually attended that one. But Leanna, what for you was, say, like one or two that you really liked?
Yeah, it's kind of difficult to choose because there's just, you just gain so much from each session. One that stuck out for me, I'd have to say, is the understanding and impacting the numbers session. It was really interesting. And one thing that they said, an imagery about how much chickens weigh at slaughter, because we know that chickens that are bred for meat consumption are raised to grow really big, really quickly. Mm-hmm. And they said that to compare it to a human, if a human was 150 pounds, that'd be like the human being 900 pounds at the time it's slaughtered.
Wow.
So that's pretty staggering there.
So I see you taking, like, learning that information and take, so the tagline of the conference, we'll get to that. Get informed, get inspired, and get active. So you got informed. I'm sure you got inspired. So how, and I know after last year's conference too, you started to become quite active in activism, which you weren't really before. So how are you going to be active this year? Like what are you taking from it to become active?
Yeah, it's always just really inspiring hearing the difference that the individuals are making for the voiceless. And I find that's what motivates me the most, that the animals need us to speak up for them and live in a way where we lead by example in showing compassion towards them. Some things I'd like to do is host like movie screenings of documentaries that I've been collecting, maybe just with friends or friends of friends first. Mm-hmm. And maybe that'll grow. But social media is a great way to reach out to people too. So I'll be doing more of that. And like last year, this year I'm also going to make the pledge to fast against slaughter, which the organization Farm hosts in October.
What was the general sort of idea that the conference holders had for people that were attending in terms of the point that they were trying to make to the attendees?
In my opinion, I think it was to have a meeting place to showcase the greatest diversity possible of different people representing the animal rights movement. And I really feel that Farm makes such a concerted effort to get as many different organizations there. Like they, just starting, I think, last year, they started having PETA there again because they had been boycotting the conference for years for many years. This conference has been around since the 1980s. And I just really appreciate, like, they don't discriminate. Anyone with an opinion, like a valid sort of a perspective in the animal rights movement and doing work for the animals, they're welcome to come and attend. So I really appreciated that. Just a really great diversity.
I'm Josh from Madison, and I really liked just the networking aspect of the conference, going around meeting people from all across the country and learning about what all their organizations are doing.
Hi, I'm Patricia Welty, and I'm here at the AR conference. I was exhibiting for my organization called A Vegan Life. A Vegan Life is based in D.C. It's an educational nonprofit, and we hold events to try to spur people to learn the benefits of being vegan. This has been a great conference. I've enjoyed everything, meeting people. All the plenaries have been fantastic. And we did a little event at our table. We had people sign a letter that they wrote to the Costco CEO to let them know we don't like to get eggs from battery cage hens.
You're listening to Animal Voices Radio here on 100.5 CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio, broadcasting live on unceded Coast Salish territories.
Okay, so now it's time for events. This coming Sunday, August 23rd at 10 o'clock a.m., there will be the very first meetup for DXE, Direct Action Everywhere Vancouver. It will be taking place at SFU Harbor Center at 515 West Hastings in 1530, the Canadian Pacific Lecture Room. DXE meetups are a new event. They'll start with an informal hangout and cookies and end with short presentations by community members and an open discussion. So at this meetup, community members will be sharing about Animal Voices Radio, this very show that you're listening to.
Because we're co-sponsoring this event.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And the Vegan Teens of Vancouver, also the activism scene in Toronto, and volunteering at a dog shelter in Thailand. So again, that's this Sunday, August 23rd at 10 a.m. at SFU Harbor Center. Also, there is an action coming up this Tuesday, August 25th, from 9:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. At this point, the location of the action is not being made public. But if you are interested in attending, you can email DXE Vancouver at vancouverdxe@gmail.com. And again, that's Tuesday, August 25th from 9:30 a.m. to 2 p.m.
So once again, you are listening to the Animal Voices show, and this is our annual show where we report on the Animal Rights National Conference, which took place this year from July 30th to August the 2nd in Washington, D.C. So we have several clips of interviews and talks that we'll be playing for you today. And the first one, as Liana mentioned earlier, is of Jane Velez Mitchell. She is a journalist broadcaster for the animals, and she runs a site called Jane Unchained. And she's just one of my heroes. And as Liana mentioned, just people were just sort of wandering around, and we saw her there, and I had to meet her. I had to get my picture taken with her. Thanks for doing that, Liana. I've just admired her for so long. She does so much amazing work for the animals. You probably know about her because you see her in the media. And now she runs her own media channel, where she takes this animal rights news to the masses. So here we have Jane Velez Mitchell speaking about some of the work that she does.
Hi, my name is Jane Velez Mitchell, and I'm the editor of JaneUnchained.com. And what we are is a multi-platform social media news outlet on animal rights. I've been a journalist for 37 years, but when my show ended, I had a cable TV show. Somebody had given me a GoPro camera. My girlfriend had given me a GoPro camera, and I said, well, let's go out and shoot an animal rights demonstration. Now, I always knew that they were undercovered by mainstream media, but what I found shocking and horrifying was that every protest we went to in New York City, some of them with more than 100 people, no media coverage whatsoever. I was the only media there, so I immediately created a social media news outlet, used all my news gathering skills, my video shooting and editing skills to start creating videos. We only started this in November of 2014, and we've already produced more than 150 original videos that have been seen at this point by millions of people. And so what we do is we share them on Facebook, on JaneUnchained.com, on YouTube, on Google+, on Tumblr, on Pinterest. And with every new social media outlet that comes up, we share them as well. So we're reaching the millennials. We're reaching tons of people. And our goal is not just to preach to the converted, because I have a huge following of animal rights activists, but I want to get it beyond that to the mainstream. And the way we do that is by boosting the posts. And when you boost a post, you can put in, you know, what cities you want, what demographics you want. You can target people. So we're also doing independent journalism. I've flown to Israel and to Florida numerous times on my own dime as part of this project covering Monkeygate, which is the really sordid story behind the laboratory monkey breeding facilities. And there's a huge battle going on in Hendry County. And in conjunction with TheirTurn.net, run by Donnie Moss, who is a fellow journalist, independent journalist, and he does a lot of writing, but we're both doing now video and writing. We broke the story of how they were secretly building a second massive laboratory monkey breeding facility in Hendry County. And by targeting our posts to that area, Naples, Fort Myers, Collier County, Lee County, Hendry County, Immokalee, we put all those towns and those counties in there, we're letting people know about what's going on in their backyard. We also send out mass emails. All of this requires a lot of work. Literally, my girlfriend and I are doing this around the clock on our own dime, essentially doing what a news organization of 20, 30 people might do in a given day. So we need everybody's help because the mainstream media does not cover animal rights. I've seen it with my own eyes. Protests of more than 100 people outside the Barclays Center against Ringling Brothers. No media there. And I could give you a million more examples. And so what we're doing is an end run around mainstream media, getting directly to the people through social media. And the good demographic that's going to change the world, the younger people who are cord cutters, they're not really watching as much cable. So that's basically what Jane Unchained is doing.
That's amazing. What brings you to the Animal Rights Conference this weekend?
Well, I'm involved in speaking tonight. These are the most wonderful people. Everybody, look at what you're doing. You're doing it out of the goodness of your heart. And it's just great to be around like-minded people. We are changing the world. We are reaching the tipping point. And things are going to happen very quickly as far as animal rights. I can assure you of that.
So that was Jane Velez Mitchell, a wonderful animal rights activist. And if you're interested in seeing a short video that she actually made all just about the conference, actually when we ran into her, she was making the video. Remember she was taking mm-hmm. footage, Liana?
Yeah.
Well, she compiled that into a fun video, short video that she posted. And it's on our website if you want to check that out, animalvoices.org, and on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. So the next person who I did an interview with, who I was also very honored and amazed to meet at the Animal Rights Conference, was a man who I had just heard of the week before, and I was so impressed. His name is Robert Acheson. So the week before the conference, he penned a column in the USA Today newspaper called Real Men Don't Eat Meat. So he spoke about his experience of being in the Marine Corps and in the police service, and actually police captain for over 25 years. He he just retired recently, and he spoke about his experiences of just being in such just being changing to a lifestyle of veganism late in life because his daughter influenced him, and she was at the conference presenting actually. And yeah, so I happened to notice his name tag at the conference, and I had to meet him, and he was so awesome to speak to. And Amir, you might be interested in this because this he spoke about masculinity and veganism, because mm-hmm. I really had to get that because he's such a great example, I think, for men out there because of his background. And not only that, well, you'll hear he talks about how he grew up on a dairy farm, too. So he's got all these strikes against him, and now he's speaking up for the animals. So, yeah, this is Robert Atchison speaking for the animals.
My name is Robert Atchison. I'm from the state of Iowa. I was raised on a farm before I moved into a populated town of 50 people, Millerton, Iowa. I was in the Marine Corps for 4 years. I spent 25 years with the D.C. Police Department. I retired roughly 8 months ago. I'm here at the conference because my daughter works as the campaign director for the Humane League, and she's probably more boisterous and stubborn than I am. But I'm just a big believer of animal rights, and I wish everyone would just A, treat animals better, B, treat themselves better. And the only way you're going to treat yourself better is to eat better. One of the things that always gets me is that because of my military and police officer experience, you end up knowing a lot of people that have got this machismo about them, about folks that think you have to eat meat, men in particular. If not, you're not a real man. And it just drives me up a wall. I mean, I the strongest German is a vegan, apes are vegans, elephants are vegans, we don't need it, and it's bad for us. So it's just a win-win situation for a number of folks. But when you see so many people that just, think that that you need it, and if you don't take it, you won't be taken serious. If you don't eat meat, you won't be taken serious. It's just infuriating.
So what would be your one main message to men who see going vegan as a threat to their masculinity? What would you say to them?
Most men are overweight and unhealthy. And if you want to be the right weight and be healthy, you have to give up eating meat. You have to give up animal products. There's carcinogens, there's cancer-causing elements in milk, eggs, meat, cheese. And vegans in general are much healthier people.
So that was Robert Atchison. And if you want to take a look at that wonderful article that he wrote, it's posted on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. The next person who we have, this is a clip from an amazing talk that she gave at one of the plenary sessions. I think it was in the morning. So every morning they would do like a session where some notable speakers would come and give us talks on more general topics. And this is Patrice Jones. We've had her on the show before. She's an eco-feminist scholar. And I wanted to highlight this clip because this is, she's talking about speciesism and intersectionality. And I really like what she has to say about it. And this is something that we like to highlight here on our show too. So here's that clip.
Speciesism is discrimination against and exploitation against beings on the basis of species. The idea that on account of species you might be bought and sold, you might be liable to be forced to work without compensation, you might be killed, you might be displaced from your home, you might be exploited in various ways. Yes? Because of your species. And that's why we say speciesism. Some of you have been hearing about carnism. Carnism talks about some things that are aspects of speciesism, but it's much more narrow. What I'm trying to say is we need to understand speciesism if we want to liberate animals. Speciesism has a basic logic or a way of thinking about the world or being in the world. There are various speciesist logics. Some of the common ones are might makes right. Yeah, I can just do, I want to do it, I can do it, so I will do it. This excuses or doesn't even bother to excuse much animal exploitation. And you know what? Folks who operate on that basis tend to do it much more broadly. We can all think of ways that people have hurt other groups of people or the environment on the basis of might makes right as well. Yes? Another way is God said so, right? God told me that I could. made you for me. God told me I could have this land. Yes? And again, you probably don't need me to tell you that the same people who say God made the animals for us to eat have also told us that God told them to smite the homosexuals and take the land of these people because they're heathens. Yes? Okay, so God said so is another logic that is often used for speciesism, but probably most commonly these days are exceptionalism and ableism. Exceptionalism is the idea that the ones who are closest to me, the ones who are most like me, are the specialist. And we're so special that we can exploit everybody else. The flip side of it is they're so inferior that we may legitimately buy and sell them, we may legitimately enslave them, we may legitimately do whatever we want to them, etc. Yes? That's exceptionalism. And then there's this idea that human beings have some particular capability or capacity, like reason or whatever it might be, and because of that capability or capacity, they may rightfully exploit, enslave, displace, etc. Yes? Yes, and that is also known as ableism. So that brings me to the next point, which is that we can't actually understand speciesism in isolation. We have to understand speciesism in context, right? Speciesism doesn't just exist as some separate thing all on its own that we could just sort of pull out and it's fixed. Speciesism is deeply embedded in ways of thinking about the world that also are all bound up with ways of thinking about other people and ways of thinking about the environment. Yes? So this brings us to this idea that I think they thought was the new idea I would talk about today, intersectionality, except that, you know, it's from the 1980s. It's just that we're really late thinking about it. So you may have heard this word, and you may have even heard or used it as though it were just sort of this vague way of saying that people ought to pay attention to race. And certainly the idea that people ought to pay attention to race is part of intersectionality. But intersectionality is actually it's a very powerful conceptual tool that's very simple but also very deep. People have been working on it for decades. The basic idea is that different forms of oppression, racism, sexism, ableism, etc., don't exist separately but in fact interact with one another. And it's not just that they use the same sort of mindsets and they tend to benefit the same sets of people, and they use the same sorts of tactics, such as stereotyping. It's that they're deeply linked at the root. It's that they're deeply linked at the root. And they interact with one another in ways that support one another. Does this make sense? So the different forms of oppression interact with one another in ways that is not possible to disaggregate them. What I'm trying to say here is, for example, that women of color experience forms of discrimination that are the result of the intersection of racism and sexism. And these are forms of oppression that are not shared by white women or by men of color because they're a product of the interaction between racism and sexism. I hope that makes sense. The other piece is that the different forms of oppression not only interact with one another, but they support each other. And so if you sort of chip away at this one, but you don't pay attention to that one's going to come and help the other one stay up. So actually, you need to look at this one too. Also, that they interact in ways that they form systems of oppression. Huh? Systems of oppression. And here's a really important point. And the idea is if you want to dismantle the systems of oppression, then you've got to go to the intersections.
Well, I thought that those were just some really profound words. What did you think, Elise?
Oh, yeah, I thought that was brilliant. I mean, she pretty much just summed it right up in 5 minutes, covered all the bases.
She made me think about things I hadn't even really thought about before, mm-hmm. like just the way that she talks about just speciesism. She said it's not in isolation, but we need to think about it in context with all the other isms.
Right, exactly. So. Yeah, I think it has its roots in the same sort of thinking, the same sort of mindset that contributes to all other oppressions. So they're definitely linked.
Yeah, I'm always learning, and I definitely learned from that talk. So for our next little piece here, we've got a couple of more little testimonials from people talking about their highlights of the conference.
Hi, Hi, my name is Kim Williams, and I have a website called vegetarianlight.com. And I'm at the Animal Rights Conference and just found it very inspiring and a lot of positive information. I've never been here before, and I was kind of afraid of, like, a lot of scary videos. But the information I've gotten has been more on the positive side about, like, changes that have happened that are inspiring and action that we can take.
I'm Emily Pickett, and I'm Program Coordinator with the Vancouver Humane Society. So it's my first time at the National Animal Rights Conference, and I think I gained a lot from it. It was good to go to. There were so many different kinds of workshops. I think I liked that so many of them were kind of intersectional in nature, so you could learn about some of the human rights struggles, some of the animal rights struggles, environmental struggles. I think my favorite one was probably the gender, sexuality, and animal equality talk. I learned a lot about ecofeminism and the connection of that with animal rights, and it sort of reinforced why I'm vegan and why we need to continue to fight for all the different struggles, that they're unique in nature, but that there's common oppression, I guess, that we all need to sort of support each other and fight our forms of oppression that we face. So, yeah, I think it was a great conference, and I look forward to hopefully coming back again next year.
You're listening to Animal Voices Radio here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Co-op Radio, on unceded Salish, Coast Salish territories known as Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
It's the one story that I had to start with, actually, that's really weird. It seems like whenever there's a lot of hope in the movement, something comes along and kind of like makes you think, what the heck? Gucci in July did a show, and I didn't hear about it because the story didn't really break until now, but about kangaroo fur lined footwear.
And I was what will reading, they think of next?
Yeah.
I know. And the most troubling part about this story that I was just reading just now is that they've labeled this fur environmentally friendly, even though the conservation experts in Australia are saying that kangaroo populations are in decline. Mm. And the reason Gucci is saying it's environmentally friendly is it's part of kangaroo culls, which, again, are not any longer necessary. And then also just the price on these things, not that it matters, but $900 to $1,500 Australian for environmentally friendly kangaroo-lined footwear, which is, yeah, just really disgusting. But the good thing is there's been a lot of public outcry about it on different sides. Some people just don't like it from a fashion standpoint, but obviously tons of people that are within the animal rights movement in Australia and worldwide now seeing this article are condemning it, and as they should be, because it's ridiculous. I've never heard of anything like this before, actually.
I had never even heard of kangaroo slaughter being a thing until my sister here told me about it. When was that, yesterday? You were speaking about how you attended a session at the conference about what's happening to animals in Australia. And that yeah. I didn't go to that one because I wanted to go to another one. I'm glad you went to it, though. But it's just keeping us informed. And you learned about that, right?
Like, yeah, they touched a bit on it and mm-hmm. showed a slide, something that I'd never even seen before.
I know. And if you're so far away from that part of the world, we just don't think about that. So it's like a shock to us.
Yeah. Well, I have some news that's a little bit happier. In Korea, two captive dolphins have found freedom and rejoined their family. This was reported on by Rick O'Berry's Dolphin Project, dolphinproject.net. Taesan, who is a 20-year-old male, and Boksoon, a 17-year-old female, were once captive Indo-Pacific bottlenose dolphins, and they were released back to their home range early in July. They were spotted with their native pod in Jeju Ocean on July 15th. Three other dolphins, Jadal, Chunsam, and Sampal, who were previously released in 2013, were also spotted in the same pod, along with 40 other wild dolphins on the northeast coast of Jeju Island. These five dolphins were all caught and sold illegally to aquariums between 2009 and 2010. They were forced to perform in aquariums until the Supreme Court ruled in 2013 to release them back to the wild as a result of years of campaigning by local animal welfare groups. Believed to be suffering from severe depression, Taesan and Boksoon, these two dolphins who were just released, were excluded from the release project and stayed under the protection of the Seoul Grand Park for a period of time. Rick O'Berry of the Dolphin Project was in Korea supervising the rehabilitation program for the three dolphins in 2013. In December 2014, animal protection groups filed petitions to urge the Ministry of Maritime and Fisheries to return the dolphins to their natural habitat where they belonged. As a result, the dolphins were transferred to a sea pen on May 14th of this year. and they were set free on July 6th. When the gate opened, a group of 30 dolphins were observed swimming around the net, greeting their long-lost family members. And these dolphins were rehabilitated using Rick O'Berry's Dolphin Project protocol. So I find that very inspiring. I mean, obviously, we're just seeing more and more cases now gradually of captive cetaceans being released successfully and rejoining their families, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, you don't often get to hear about happy stories like that. The fact you said that the dolphins, their family were waiting for them.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Oh my goodness, it's so touching to hear that. And thanks for reporting a good story. Often we have bad stories, so thanks for a good one.
I'm Reverend John Gibb Millspaugh, and for the past year and a half, I've served as executive director of Beyond Carnism, which is Melanie Joy's organization. And I'm moving on to more intersectional food justice activism, and I've been delighted. This is something like my 10th conference, maybe, and I love coming because it's such great exposure to the many ways that people are making a difference on these issues. And after feeling, after going about things in your own particular way, and for many people feeling isolated and in a world that doesn't necessarily share their ideology as much as they wished, to be in a group of people who are using a stunning variety of successful methods is just a sense of coming home and a sense of inspiration and creativity, and it's so energizing. And even though I'm in the middle of the conference, I already can't wait for next year.
So next up, we have a clip from a talk that I attended by Missy Freeland, and she is a DXC activist, and that's Direct Action Everywhere. And she did a really interesting talk that I think is super important to share because it's about community building in our movement. And what is any movement without community building, as she speaks about in this talk that she gave? So I'd like you to listen to this, and perhaps we'll have some thoughts about that after.
Every successful movement had a strong community behind it. Past movements had communities already established. Animal rights is the exception. We communities to catch up with the activism. In the civil rights movement, it was the Black church. In this photo, Martin Luther King Jr. speaks to a church during the Montgomery bus boycott. In this photo, a racially mixed group of ministers raised their hand in response when MLK asked them if they were willing to go to jail for a cause. Power in unity and power in numbers, quotes Martin Luther King. In the women's suffrage movement, there were women's support circles already established. ACT UP had gay bars and later community centers. Cesar Chavez moved city to city to inspire people to organize for a better life. These movements had strong communities. The animal rights movement had people fighting on Facebook. The animals need us to work together, build bridges, and support one another. Likely, the most important reason for structure is to ensure diversity in a movement. We naturally tend to gravitate towards people who look like us, think like us, and act like us. With this approach to organizing, we may end up with a movement that's very homogenous. Sometimes treating everyone the same may be unintentionally oppressive. Making efforts to make sure everyone is welcome is what should be necessary. During a social event or a protest, make an effort to make everyone feel welcome at home. Say hello to new faces and old faces. Make sure you are listening more than talking. Take pictures of people together, tag and share them, so they feel connected with the community. So why is diversity important? Diversity allows us to learn from another who have different experiences, and we can help us grow even further. In a movement that is rightfully stereotyped as white and middle class, having marginalized people in our community will show other marginalized people that this movement is also for them. The end goal is that we want a movement that is welcoming to everyone who wants to speak for animals. The animal rights movement is open for all ages, all genders, all families, and all ethnicities. So how do you build a community? The foundation of a strong community is good culture. Movements rise and fall based on the effort, creativity, and enthusiasm of the activists. Promoting good culture should be one of our highest priorities, as movements are often torn by infighting. Community gives us knowledge and practice to learn how to speak with people on one-to-one conversations, how to communicate with family and friends, which can be difficult without a community behind to support. People have sports teams, a chess club they meet once a week. You always see your friend once a month. Some people train 5 times a week for sports. This cause is more important than any of those. At a minimum, we should be spending as much time we would on those for the animals. When we ask people to come once a week to a potluck or to a protest, in the long run, it's not that much. Communities connect and inspire vegans to be active for animals. Communities reduce recidivism and burnout. Communities provide the fertile ground of a mass social justice movement.
So I really liked that talk, and Elise, you were talking about the community meetup that we're going to be having this Sunday, which
right.
sort of ties into this whole idea. It's actually being put on by DXC as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I just think it's just super important to be able to meet in less formal environments.
Right.
And I haven't really been to any of... you said it was the first one, but they've had other social, I mean, they do social events for sure. And we're
yeah.
actually, there's Sanctuary Volunteer Day tomorrow too. And I think that's a
right.
great community meetup and just like a really great way to build culture, as you said.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And all great movements, you said, are a result of having like a strong foundation in culture, right?
Right.
So I think that we need to think more about that. And I think we actually have a pretty good culture as it stands here in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And then, as I've mentioned before, Elise is also the administrator of the Vancouver Vegans group on Facebook. How many people do we have on there now?
It's over 2,100 and
yeah,
growing every day.
That's a lot. That's great.
Yeah.
So for our next clip, we have Dallas Rising. She works for In Defense of Animals, speaking about the power of language and framing. And in this clip, she talks about specific words that we use, such as it when we're referring to an animal, meat when we're referring to or people are referring to animals they eat. And then some that I hadn't really thought of before either, overfishing and over pet population. And she speaks to us about why those are wrong and what we can use instead. So here's that clip.
You will see it in a lot, just about everywhere. You're going to see it in the media. You're going to read it in children's books. So one of the things that the Animal Rights Coalition does, we own the only vegan store in Minnesota. And we have a bookshelf. Obviously, and I review every single children's book that we have on that bookshelf. And I look for language, and I look for how animals are represented, and I look for things. And it's amazing because there will be an incredible book, but that pronoun issue will negate it because animals are not its. They are not something. They are someone. Right? And we know this, but it's important that that's reflected in our language because we give people contradictory messages otherwise. And it's hard. It's already kind of hard for people to get. So instead of it, using she, he, him, her, they, them. So there are two options. It didn't do anything. It didn't do anything to him and he shouldn't have killed it. She didn't do anything to him and he shouldn't have killed her. You know, like that has a different resonance, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, factory farms. I don't ever use the term factory farms unless I really mean factory farms. But that's really what I'm talking about. Maybe I'll talk about the big, huge waste lagoons that you can find behind factory farms, right? But I don't talk about the cruelty on factory farms unless I want to illustrate the numbers, maybe, of animals that are being used and hurt on factory farms, because just like Carrie explained, there are a lot of issues that are not, you know, there are a lot of problems with small family farms. So some alternatives for that might be animal farms, farms that keep animals intended for food, farms that use animals as though they're food, etc. So whatever is, you know, this isn't, you have to be really mindful of language and you have to be willing to have a little bit of fluidity but consistency in what you're saying and how you're saying it. It really requires some being present. And so that's good. Same thing with overfishing. So, you know, there's some t-shirts that I would love to have in the store because they have great design and everything, but it says, like, overfishing hurts or something. And it's, you know, it's got, like, big nets in the ocean and great, you know, but all fishing is a problem. So I don't want to ever send the wrong message. Okay, so an example. I'd really like to see a world without factory farms versus I would really like to see a world without farms that keep animals intended for food. That's probably a more reflective statement of your true desire, right? Another word is meat. Another word is meat. Meat is a euphemism. Meat is an assigned, it's an arbitrary word that is used across, meat can, we can say, you know, cow, we don't actually, we say horse meat, we say beef. We say rabbit meat, we say pork. So even within the industries themselves that, you know, some animals require, some animals are, you know, they apply euphemisms to some, they don't to some others, but we want to be kind of consistent in what we're saying. So usually what I mean, and again, read the context, but animal flesh, just plain flesh, the bodies of animals, animals killed for food. So, for example, when I talk to people and I say, and I talk to them about my story, about how I ended up where I am, I say, well, I don't say I stopped eating meat when I was 10. I say I stopped eating animals when I was 10. It's subtle and it really makes a difference. It's one word, but it jars people out of what they expect. You know, and it creates a picture for people. Another phrase that I don't use anymore is pet overpopulation. I don't use that one. I don't really use the term pet. A lot of people are saying companion animals at this point, and I even have started to change it around. So a lot of people don't say pet anymore. A lot of people say companion animals. I changed that around after thinking about it because I don't say zoo animals and I don't say farm animals, because that implies that what they're meant for is to be in a zoo, to be on a farm. And the boys that I live with and love and adore and are my family members, they were not born to be my companion. Like, that's really egocentrical. So they're my animal companions. Or my babies. So, but you know, I mean, animal companions are really important. And I think, I mean, again, like, we can improve multiple times on things.
So much more that could be said on language, but we are running out of time here. So this show, we've been playing clips from the Animal Rights Conference and different little interviews that we did. And I just wanted to point out the website for the Animal Rights Conference. It's arconference.org. The dates and exact location hasn't been set yet quite for next summer, but you can find updates on their website or sign up for Farm Animal Rights Movement on Facebook, and you can find out. It's going to be on the West Coast for sure, though. We know that much. So we're just going to quickly end here with a few more words that I think that just really sort of sum up the whole theme of the conference itself. Another testimonial from Beth Redwood and some of the closing words that Nathan Runkel from Mercy for Animals gave at the end of the conference. Here we go.
Hi, my name is Beth Redwood, and I would say that the highlight of this conference for me was going last night and hearing the eulogy for Lisa Shapiro, and also secondarily the one for Norm Phelps. But the one for Lisa Shapiro was kind of an unsung hero and not known by everybody. It was so motivating that she had used her life every day to get up and work for animals and stand on on lawns and hand out leaflets and support vegan causes and have people stay with her and make vegan food. And I was so deeply inspired to do more with my life and my activism by that, and to make my life even more focused on what can I do every day so that when I die, just like poor Lisa did so early, I want to have left a beautiful legacy like that for animals too.
And I'll leave you with this story. It goes something like this. There's a grandfather and his son, and they're walking along the beach. And there are hundreds of starfish on the beach, and they're starting to die. They're starting to dry out. And the little boy, he picks up the starfish, and he's throwing them back into the water. And his grandfather says, "What are you doing? There are hundreds and hundreds of starfish here. There is no way that you can save all of these starfish." And the little boy, wise beyond his years, smiled at his grandpa, picked up another starfish, and threw him back into the water. And he said, "It matters to this one." And he picked up another starfish and threw him back and said, "And it matters to this one." And in so many ways, that is the story that we're faced with. We know the numbers are astronomical, billions of animals. We can't wrap our head around that statistic. But compassion is a renewable resource. It is flexing a muscle that grows stronger as we use it. And we know that for those who benefit from our compassion, it can mean the difference between life and death, freedom or imprisonment. We are in a position where we hold so much power, just as people, and people who have the means to have a voice and the freedom to have a voice. We must not squander this opportunity that we have. We must do everything that we can. And I will leave you with this quote from Harriet Beecher Stowe. She said, "It's a matter of taking the side of the weak against the strong, something the best people have always done. And it is hard to imagine a group of individuals who are weaker and more vulnerable and more oppressed than animals. And all of us have so much strength and so much power. And in this situation of us holding that and then being at our mercy, we must seize the opportunity. We must speak up. We must speak out. We must do everything we can to bring about the day of animal liberation as quickly as possible." Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for joining us on today's show, which has been a special broadcast reviewing the Animal Rights National Conference. Thank you, Elise, for being a guest co-host.
Thank you for having me.
And Leanna as well for coming on the show. Yeah. I hope you come back.
Yeah.
And yeah, and I wanted to extend especially a huge thank you to FARM for putting on this conference. Mm-hmm. I know it must take just so much work to get every detail just right. And I've been going to the conference now, I think it's been 6 or 7 years, and I just see it getting better and better every year. So I just wanted to say also, you're listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM, CFRO, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. What do we have coming up next week, Amir?
I think Alyssa has some clips for me from VegFest, actually, that we are going to play. And then also, hopefully, we're going to be doing my first interview, actually. So get pumped for that.
Definitely be there for that. So make sure that you catch us on Facebook. Our website is animalvoices.org. Facebook is Animal Voices Vancouver. Our Twitter is Animal Voices YVR. And we're going to leave you with a song here by Daniel Redwood. This is a song called Justice, which, listen to the lyrics. It's really, really nice lyrics. He composed this. He was present at the conference, and he performed this song live at the conference. So we'll be leaving you with that, just a little taste of what was at the conference. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Justice was born in Kansas, and getting shot saved his life. Let me tell you the story, how he escaped the butcher's knife. Justice was riding in a cattle truck, stopped along the interstate. when he crashed through the doors, ran for his life, 'cause freedom couldn't wait. He was taken down by an officer with a tranquilizer gun so bold. But when it reached his bloodstream, it meant his flesh could not be sold. So sing a song for justice, sing it with all your might. Sing it for the dawn that waits beyond the darkest night. And pray for every animal confined and misunderstood, for the day the final slaughterhouse shuts its doors for good. Justice arrived, a peaceful prairie, from a long, cold, lonely ride. Trembling with each step he took, truly terrified. There was a cow named Sherman there, who stayed at Justice's side all day, and licked his face again and again, till Justice was okay. So sing a song for justice, sing it with all your might. Dawn it waits beyond the darkest night. And pray for every animal confined and misunderstood, and for the day the final slaughterhouse shuts its doors for good. Justice, he learned his lessons well. Yes, he learned them all just fine. And when each new arrival comes, he's always first in line. Could be a chicken, could be a goat, or a pig, or a cow like him. Makes no difference what you are, Justice is your kin. He greets each one with a joyful sound, and licks their heads the same. This gentle giant, proud and strong, lives up to his name. So sing a song for justice, sing it with all your might. Sing it for the dawn that waits beyond the darkest night. And pray for every animal confined and misunderstood, and for the day the final slaughterhouse shuts its doors for good.